Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, we moved over to Studio 8 and we've live music today from Andy Irvine ahead of his 80th birthday celebrations in June. We were all commenting, Andy, I know it's a bit rude, but on how well you look.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Ray. Yeah.
It's hard to believe you're 80.
Well, I can't believe it either. You know? And the time goes by so quickly that I'll be 90 before I can turn around.
Does it speed up as you get older?
Oh, God, yes.
Does it?
You haven't begun to feel that yet?
I know, I suppose, you're younger than I am. Yeah. Well, having children definitely speeds up time.
Yeah, yeah. It never slows down. I wondered when I was younger if it sped up. And then when you got really old, whether it slowed down. But I don't think it ever slows down.
Yeah. Well, you're still going at it. And you're going to have a in Vicar Street on the June 20th. You had one for your 70th.
Last year, it seems like.
So you're going to get all your pals in to Vicar Street.
Yes, it'll be a bit of a party on the stage there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you've accumulated a good few pals along the way. I was doing the maths here. I think it's going to be this September. Was it 60 years since you first came to Dublin? Would that be right?
62. Yeah, 60 years.
That's mad.
Yes.
So you were born in England, but you never considered yourself an Englishman.
I never did. No. My mother was Irish and my father was Scottish, and I was an actor. You know, from a child at an early age. So my school friends looked on me with suspicion.
Because you're an actor,
yeah.
right, and then you're a lot of your actor friends were Irish, and you came over here and found your tribe, I suppose.
I did, absolutely. I found the life I was looking for, which I had not found in London.
Yeah, which is a nice lead into the first song. We've loads of things to talk about.
Okay,
Aaron's Green Shore. Tell us about this song.
Well, it's a song. It's an Aisling in that it's a man falls asleep.
A dream.
Yes, and has a dream about meeting this beautiful woman who turns out to be Ireland. And she says she's come to awaken her brethren who are slumbering because they need to wake up and see how they can better their lives and the country.
Okay.
So it has a certain modern connotation.
Yes, yeah, right.
No. One evening of late, as I rambled by the banks of yon clear purling stream, I sat down by a bed of primroses, and I gently fell into a dream. I dreamed I beheld a fair damsel, her equal I have ne'er seen before. And she sighed upon the wrongs of her country as she strayed upon Erin's green shore. Well, I quickly approached this fair female. My jewel, come tell me your name, for really to me you're a stranger, or I should not have asked you the same. She appeared like the goddess of freedom, and liberty's emblem she wore, decked around with shamrocks and roses that bloom upon Erin's green shore. Well, she quickly replied, I'm a stranger, my mind unto you I'll unfold, and I'm here in the midst of all danger, and I can't tell my friends from my foes. I'm at daughter of Daniel O'Connell. From England I have lately sailed all, and I've come to awaken my brethren that slumber on Erin's green shore. But I think you're a true son of Gronje. My mind unto you I'll disclose. Go down to that meeting at Clonmel, and truly your enemies expose. For when you do possess true wisdom, no enemy will come to your door, and the bright star of freedom shall illumine the poor upon Erin's green shore.
That was lovely. That was lovely.
Thank you.
An octave mandola or mandola.
An octave mandola. Well, that's what they call it. I mean, it's all these instruments have kind of various names, and they're all hybrid instruments. And
so, just tell us about that. It's an eighth string.
Yes, it's eight strings. This it's got octave strings on it, which I don't normally have on my other instruments, but it's tuned. It's tuned to the same tuning as the bouzouki,
right,
that I would play, except that it's got less of a stretch. And
you were the bouzouki man in Planxty?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I was the mandolin man.
Mandolin,
because,
right.
Because Donald was always...
He was bouzouki.
...tied to the bouzouki.
Right, yeah. Okay, so you were mandolin, right. I'm interested to know about the politics, the internal politics of Planxty. Do you mind we chat about that for a while?
No,
because I played Arthur MacBride there. You did vocals on that.
Yeah.
So that was officially from the first album, but there was a Christy Moore album called Prosperous, which you all played on.
Did we do that on it? Yeah, well, we did. No, we didn't sing that song. Yeah.
No. You did that on the first Planxty.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, you all played on Christy's Prosperous album.
Yeah.
But you weren't known as Planxty.
That's right. That was the germination of the band.
It? Right. Yeah. Okay. So he sort of asked you, would you play in my album?
Yes.
And then after it, what happened?
Sometime later. The album did very well.
It
was well received. And I think it might have been 3 or 4 months later. He said, Andy, what would you feel about forming a band? And I said, I don't know who'll be in it. He said... Well, Donal and Liam. And I said, Liam? He's never going to do that, is he? He said, oh yeah, he's way into it. So
and why did you suspect that Liam Flynn
wouldn't
be involved?
Well, Liam was, to say that he wasn't exactly the same kind of people we were,
right,
was perhaps, I mean, I think somebody once called us three hippies and a schoolmaster or something like that, which is not quite true.
Yeah. But, so he was quieter, more reserved.
He was quieter, and he was more accepted in the traditional music scene of that time than we were.
Mm. You were a bit more rowdy. It was,
you could
listening
say
back to, listening back to, you know, Christy's album, which was in effect Planxty's first album. And I know a bit about it. Like, there was a guy who came over from England with just two microphones.
That's right, yeah.
And there was a lovely, raw rowdiness about it, wasn't there? Do you ever listen back to it?
I haven't listened to it for a long time, but it worked remarkably well in the basement of the house we did it in, with just the two crossed microphones like that.
And you were young and nearly punk-like.
Yeah.
That's what came across to me listening to it.
Yeah.
What age were you at the time then?
Well, I was the oldest. I was... we're talking about 1971. I was 29.
Right.
Yeah.
And you were the eldest of the...
I was, yeah.
And then, so Planxty was formed then out of that.
Yeah.
And for people who don't know, it was recorded, that first album was recorded in the cellar of Andy Rinn's house in Prosperous.
That's right, yeah.
And were you part of the crew who used to come down for the sessions into Dowling's pub in Prosperous?
No, I wasn't. No, I wasn't. Donal and Liam did that.
Yeah. And Christy,
of course. Yeah.
And then Andy himself would have played the Bowron, I think.
Who?
Andy Rinn.
Oh, did he on that album?
No, he in the
oh,
sessions.
Oh, did he? I remember Andy.
That was the connection to the house, you see.
Yeah,
that's where it was recorded.
He was a very fine singer.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
when I say was, I'm sure he is, still is.
He is. So then Planxty, hugely successful. Like, you know, and I suppose I read somewhere, or maybe I heard you say, that one night you were supporting Donovan. I think it was in Cork or Galway. One of the other cities that isn't Dublin. Yeah. And you got a better reception than he did.
Yes, well, I mean, my memory is that with maybe the exception of Dublin, we blew him off the stage every night. It was remarkable. I mean, it was beyond our understanding at the time, and probably still is, that for some reason this was the music that the audience had been waiting to hear. And I mean, it's still a mystery. We never really understood it, but we seem to be the right people in the right place at the right time.
You were delivering, I suppose, traditional Irish music in a modern way. Was that it, or was it that raw energy that I described earlier on, and your youthfulness, and the fact that you were probably three hippies? Was
well,
that all of that?
It's hard to say. You know, that very first gig in the Hangar Ballroom in Galway. I think the pipes had a lot to do with it. I think, you know, for instance, that crossover between Raggle Taggle Gypsies and Tour Down the
Love, yeah.
As soon as that happened, and it wasn't a terribly comfortable change.
The album is the opening track, and one segues into the other.
Yeah. The audience kind of really freaked out at that.
Right, sure.
And they must have heard the pipes before, because, I mean, there were a lot of Ellen Pipers.
I know, but not like that.
Not in that...
Yes, yeah, yeah.
In that staging, yeah.
Yeah. And in a way, it set the scene for everything that's followed since, hasn't it? You know, the Pogues, Riverdance, you know, the list goes on.
It maybe, yes. Well, I would agree with that.
Yeah. And how does it feel? You've been, like, I know we've established that you were born in England, but not an Englishman. But you know, you were a blow-in. And I suppose we in this country, we like to remind people that they're blow-ins. And how was it for you, been in the middle of all this maelstrom of Irishness?
Well, you know, I had been around for a while before that. I'd been travelling around Ireland with Sweeney's Men. So I didn't feel, I don't think I felt any different to the other three. But the one thing I did, that I do remember, was at that first gig, after about 20 minutes, the audience started making a lot of noise. You know, they were kind of, you could feel them kind of... I thought it was a fight, because I'd played in dance halls and I'd seen fights breaking up. You know, they'd start here and they'd gradually go out like that.
And
I looked at the rest of the band and they all had smiles like up to here on their faces. And I thought, well, can't be a fight going on. It must be.
Yeah.
What can it be? But
and so this amazing, you know, thing to be a part of. And I read in Christie's book, there was it three vans of a convoy. You toured all over Europe, two Fiat vans and one Ford Transit.
Yes.
You had the crew in one, and then you were in one of the vans, and then there was another van with somebody else. And hugely popular. So why then did you split up?
Well, you know, in those days we were permanently on the road. There might be a holiday in October, in September or something like that. But it was every week, three, four gigs a week or something like that. And after 3 years, it was enough. You know, we felt played out. We'd no time to rehearse new stuff.
Right. And was it amicable?
Oh, yes.
Right. And Paul Brady had taken over from Christie.
Yeah.
Because Christie had left 18 months previously. And so then you went off yourself and Paul.
Yeah.
And you recorded that brilliant album.
Yeah. Well, you know, Paul and myself got on very well in the band. The band, I think towards the end, had fragmented a little bit. I remember playing in France, being in Paris, and somebody was staying here and somebody was staying here, and Paul and myself were staying here.
Right.
So we had a good social arrangement and musical arrangement too. And once we'd kind of split up, we wondered how we were going to earn a living. And we said, well, why don't we try playing as a duo? And
what happened to your man, Christy Moore? How did he... oh, joke.
I don't know. I haven't heard his name for a long time.
One of the things that struck me, which is, so there's a Chuck Furbo, a week residency of Planxty and the Dubliners. Now, there's a movie in that, isn't there? There's definitely a movie in that. Have you any memory of that week?
Yes, I have. I have, because we had Nicky Ryan was our sound man, you know, and the Dubliners went on the first night, and Nicky came backstage and he said, "Oh my God," he said, "you know, they're all drunk, and Luke has got the banjo down around his knees," and we were a bit shocked by this. I think Ronnie had been thrown off a horse, so he had a
he was a big horseman, wasn't he?
Yeah,
yeah,
and. So we went on and you know, we played our normal gig and I remember, you know, coming off the stage and seeing them all sitting there, and they were not in good shape.
You were in sessions with Luke Kelly?
Yeah. There's a lovely old bit of film from the Flack Hill in Clonus in 1964, where Luke is singing the black Asphalt. What was it called? That song he used to sing. And myself and Davy Hammond are accompanying him.
Right.
Yeah. Luke was a good friend. I mean, Luke was an O'Donoghue-er.
Yes,
and
O'Donoghue's
was where...
I heard you singing that O'Donoghue song.
Yeah.
So, and all the names. Like, it's just a who's who, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
and I'm always fascinated, you know, because, you know, we're now talking about it all those years on. What do you think when you're going through it? Have you any idea that this is something special, or this is a moment in time? Obviously, it's a moment in time, but a very specific, special moment in time where very special things are happening.
Well, you know, the gig in the hangar at Ballroom in Galway does stick out. That sticks out in my mind as certainly the biggest adrenaline that I ever got.
Right. Yeah.
The whole O'Donoghue's thing was brilliant, but it was more brilliant when the Dubliners were there. You know, like Ronnie would be holding court and telling stories and whatever. Yeah. That was great. And
in your song O'Donoghue's, you mentioned that he's actually from Dunleary.
And
you, because he used to do that thing on a radio station, you know, Ronnie Drew, my Dublin, Ronnie Drew.
Yeah.
I think he lived in Wicklow at the time. So that's the joke. Yeah. So you're going. So it's the Vicar Street, June 20th, 80th birthday celebrations with Andy Irvine. It's difficult to believe that you are 80. Will Paul Brady be there?
Paul Brady, yeah. Donald Lunny, the band Mosaic, and Usher's Island, Mike McGoldrick, John Doyle. Yeah, we'll have a great time.
Great session. That's what it'll be.
Yeah.
Okay, what are you gonna sing for us now?
Well, I'm gonna sing this song I wrote about Harry Houdini, the great
magician. Escapologist.
Escapologist. That's what he was. For some reason.
I'm looking forward to hearing you rhyme with something with escapologist.
I'm not sure you might be waiting a long time for that. I always have to play those three chords to find the key. Harry Houdini, the handcuffed king. Harry Houdini, the handcuffed king. He could escape from nearly anything. The world's admiration, Harry Houdini won it. For if it could be done, Houdini done it. Harry Houdini, Hungarian born, taking the whole wide world by storm, getting out of straitjackets and walking through walls. Houdini could do it if it could be done at all. He took 27 needles and he swallowed them clean. We examined his mouth, not a needle to be seen. Then he swallowed cotton thread, what a magical blend. The needles came out threaded when he pulled on the end. Locked and chained in a casket underwater, holding his breath much longer than he ought to, accepting every challenge, and he never would shun it. For if it could be done, Houdini done it. Jumping off a bridge with the big ball and chain, manacled and shackled, sure the man's insane. 10 minutes passed and we thought he must have died. When he came to the surface, it's magic, we cried. 40,000 people witnessed the affair. We cheered, shook hands and threw our hats in the air. And everybody wondered just how he'd overcome it. But if it could be done, Houdini done it. Locked and chained on a big wheel rotating, the buzz of the crowd excitedly waiting. The world's admiration, Harry Houdini won it. For if it could be done, Houdini done it. At Scotland Yard, they locked him in a cell, hanged up in leg iron, thumb screwed as well. They said they'd be back in an hour or more, but he was free before they'd even reach the door. Oh, Harry Houdini, the handcuff king, he could escape from nearly anything. The detectives, one and all, they were standing around, saying, God help us all if he's ever sent down. Locked and chained and buried alive, the audience afraid that he wouldn't survive. Whatever the risk, Houdini would run it. For if it could be done, Houdini done it.
If it could be done, Houdini did it. There, that's great. That's like, that's amazing playing. Amazing playing.
Well, thank you. I made a bit of a mistake there, but like, we won't worry about that.
I don't think anybody... Did anybody spot that now? Only yourself. You're hard on yourself. Yeah. So, in advance, happy 80th birthday.
Thank you very much, Ray. Lovely
Andy,
talk
and,
to you.
And 10 years' time, yeah. Be back sitting here.
Well, you're invited to the 80th and you can come for the 90th the next day.
Yes, well, thank you for the invitation. We'll head along. Vicar Street, June 20th. Andy Irvine and friends celebrating his 80th birthday and, what, more than 60 years... playing music in Ireland and other places, mainly in Ireland. Thanks, Andy. Andy, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Thank you, Ray. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're still in Studio 8. Andy is still here. John says, Andy, I was at a concert in Cork City Hall. Everything is true regarding Planxty and Donovan. Incredible atmosphere. Donovan was a poor leading act after Planxty. And I read somewhere that your manager at the time asked Donovan's manager, could Planxty come on after him to do an encore? Very cheeky. Didn't happen. That's...
Well, Des Kelly of the Capital Showband was our manager. A lovely, lovely man. And he had, as we were the support act, he had to go and ask Donovan if we could do an encore. But Donovan could hardly have refused because the audience was... crawling up the walls for an encore.
So you did an encore after him?
No, we didn't do an encore after him.
Oh, before him. I see.
We wouldn't have done that. No.
Sonia Carey says, my one-year-old loved that song, Erin's Green Shore. Beautiful music and singing. And Megan says, lovely to hear Andy. Planxty were a great group. Such fond memories. That's Megan. So second goodbye, Andy. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anish Toshi now in the Preescale to Nanoakta, Le Cáit de Wallace.